my fire, the one desire. Believe when I say I want it that way. But we...
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here as always with fellow beat writer Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we appreciate their support. It's Thursday morning, about 10:45, and we are here at McGinn HQ. How's it going, Bob?
Good, Mike. No complaints. The three-game road trip is history. It was an exhausting 3 weeks, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah, the two night games back-to-back, just killer. On Sunday night after the Washington game, I got 2 hours of sleep, and on the Monday game after Philadelphia, I got 90 minutes.
So Mr. McCarthy said today that this is the most challenging time of the season, of the schedule, for him and his team, right?
Yes.
As it is for us beat writers, Mike.
I agree.
Yep.
We need to hit our stride pretty soon, Bob, down the stretch here.
Yeah.
So we missed a week because I went home. I was selfish and decided to go home for Thanksgiving.
How long were you gone, Mike?
Wednesday to Sunday.
Okay.
And I hadn't been home for a while. Went home, and the reason I love going home for Thanksgiving is because my friends and I have an annual Thanksgiving touch football game, and it grows bigger and bigger and bigger every year. For the last 5 or 6 years, we've had four teams of, you know, between 5 and 7, and we do two games at once, side by side, round robin style. Team with the best record gets the trophies. Everybody gets a trophy on the winning team. Yeah. You also get a ribbon. This year, we created an MVP award, and it's this ridiculous trophy that my friend dreamed up. It's a mannequin head, a styrofoam mannequin head, and we painted eye black under it. And then he found this $5 hat at some junk shop that is a turkey that you put on your head, like an uncooked turkey.
Yeah.
And so we made that the MVP trophy, and the winner signs it, and then we give it back next year. So this year we had 23 people. We had four teams, two games. It was a great time. We had perfect weather. It was about 42 degrees, a little bit of sun. It was nice.
Was it co-ed?
Always.
Okay.
We always have a few girls that we went to high school with, and then, you know, some significant others of the group of guys have joined in over the years. So it's a lot of fun. It's all people that we went to high school with.
Any fans from the community come over to this thing?
Some parents.
Yeah?
Yeah, we've got four parents that always stop by every year, and they say hello to everybody. Check it out, watch a little bit, and it's a good time.
Who votes on the MVP? I mean, there's two games going on at once.
Yeah.
No one can see it
all. But everybody plays every team, so you have an idea of who plays well. And this year,
okay,
it was me and my friend Jeff, who was the one that designed the trophy. We voted on the MVP, and
okay,
it was a good time.
Okay.
It was a real good time.
Fun.
Now, the music,
yeah,
also tied to my hometown.
All right.
So when I was, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, that was the prime era of these boy bands, this NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, etc. And I don't know how this started, but the boys' soccer team at my high school sort of adopted one of the songs as like their thing. And, you know, you'd sing it the night before a game or whatever the case may be. And it was this song by the Backstreet Boys called I Want It That Way. And so the night before every game, we would have pasta dinners. So one family would host everybody. They'd cook a bunch of pasta, garlic bread, etc. We'd do that. Then after we eat, we would drive to the field. We'd go onto the field, say a little prayer, goof around for a little bit, and then we would sing this song in the parking lot, disband, come back the next day, and beat somebody to a pulp. That's how it went. So I just wanted to use this because it has a lot of nostalgia,
yeah,
for me, dating back to high school.
I like it.
Good stuff. Okay, now, let's talk about some football, because it's been a while. So, we are, what, 2-3 days removed now from the 27-13 win by the Packers over the Philadelphia Eagles, a road win against a team that had not lost at home this season. I thought it was a pretty impressive performance on both sides of the ball, and let's start with the obvious. Davante Adams turns in another strong game. I mean, you've seen his whole career I don't think there's any question this is the best he's ever played, right?
Right. I would agree with that. You did the story on him today, Mike. He escapes the jam. I mean, Leotis McKelvin and Nolan Carroll, veteran corners, they were trying to jam him, and they couldn't get to first base. They could hardly lay a glove on him. Those slants, what, three of them, I believe, were picture perfect. Fast feet, strong hands. He's worked on his release over and over and over again. So it was very impressive. What was it, five catches, Mike, for 103? Or
five catches for 113, okay, and two touchdowns.
Okay.
And, I mean, while we're talking about those touchdowns, you know, the first one, a slant, we've seen that before with Rodgers. He does it with Nelson. He does it with Adams. I think he's even done it with Cobb once or twice over the years. But how about that second one? That was just, to me, that was one of the best plays they've had all season, this offense, just from the quality of the throw, the placement of the ball, Adams catching it behind a defender's head in the back of the end zone. I thought it was an awesome throw.
Highlight stuff all the way. Maybe it was the best play of the year, you know, Mike?
It could be. The passing game hasn't had a whole lot of them.
No.
So that was, to me, that was impressive. And so, as you mentioned, I wrote the story in today's paper, Thursday's paper, just sort of looking at, you know, where, what his production has meant in the last 6 weeks relative to the rest of the league. So let's go through it. Starting with Chicago, 13 catches, 132, two touchdowns. Atlanta, 12 catches, 74, no touchdowns. Against Indianapolis, 4 catches, 41 yards, one touchdown. Tennessee, 6 for 156, no touchdowns. Washington, 3 for 42, no touchdowns. That was the only bad game he's had. And then Philadelphia, 5 for 113 and two touchdowns. So in a six-game stretch, he's had 43 catches for 558 yards and five touchdowns. That's more yards than he had in either of the first two seasons of his career. And if you divide that into per-game averages and put it up with the rest of the league, Julio Jones leads the league in average yards per game with 103-point-something. That's the best in the league, counting all of his games. Adams' average in this last six games would be good enough for third in the league. 93 yards. The only ones ahead of him would be Julio Jones and A.J. Green. His mark of 0.8 touchdowns per game in this stretch is better than Julio Jones, better than A.J. Green, and I think the only one it trails is like Jordy Nelson and two other guys because they have more this season. But it's impressive. And his eight touchdowns overall are tied for fourth in the league.
Yeah, no question.
Is he reliable?
Yeah, right now he is. Now, I haven't thought of this, Mike, until I'm looking at your notes here over your shoulder, and I got to say it. Every week I do these scouting reports on the next opponent, and when you were going through those opponents, all of a sudden I want to think, well, who is he beating? Who is he beating at the corners? Okay, Atlanta, now Desmond Trufant just went on IR today. I mean, that's a tremendous blow for them. So they have Trufant, and who's the other guy? Alford. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty good. The Bears were horrible.
Horrible.
The Colts. They had Vontae Davis, good player.
They did.
Weak on the other side. Tennessee, terrible. They just cut Parrish Cox.
How did they cut him? Wasn't he their top corner, technically?
He probably was, but he's a gambler, Mike, and so whatever ability he has is useless. Washington.
He spent a little bit of time against Norman, but Norman kind of stayed on one side of the field. So
yeah,
it was Norman, sometimes Breland.
Okay. And the Eagles were below average.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'd like to see him really do it against really good people, you know?
Will he have a chance this week? We'll talk about that later, but what do you think?
Yeah, I like their group.
Okay.
They have three pretty good players. That'll be a good test.
So
yep.
For so long, this offense has, because Devontae has struggled, they've relied almost exclusively on Nelson and Cobb, whatever those two guys can give them, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. When you add in this third player, how significant do you think that is? You've covered a lot of these Packers teams. When a team goes from having two decent receivers to three, does that change things a lot?
Yes, it does, and it also changes a lot when you got that fourth guy with the tight end now, Mike, right? So Cook had great things in his first game back. He just wasn't a target here the second game. But, yeah, they have four viable weapons now, don't they?
I agree.
And if Montgomery's in the backfield, that's a fifth. So, yeah, they have a lot of weapons, and McCarthy and Rodgers are using them.
And they've pared it down in terms of who else is contributing. Trevor Davis has gone off, and he's not contributing on offense anymore. Jeff Janis is down to just a handful of snaps a game. So they've basically gone with those four guys and then Montgomery. And even Montgomery's role has been reduced in recent weeks. So they've got their guys, and that's what they're going to go with at this point in time. Now, a big part – oh, go ahead, Bob.
Well, it's the one position on the team that doesn't have any injuries, right? As Nelson, Cobb, Adams – Cobb missed one game, I believe. Nobody else has been hurt.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Allison's been there. So that's been a factor, too. And if that continues, and the injuries are just striking all around the league, all over the place, it's been a remarkable year for injuries. And if secondaries continue to get depleted, Green Bay can do business through the air.
So let's stay on the offensive side of the ball, and you mentioned injuries, so let's look at the offensive line. TJ Lang was out again with a foot, right? Yeah, foot injury.
Yeah.
And so we saw Don Barclay 2 weeks ago. This week we saw Jason Spriggs at that right guard position. What did you think of Spriggs?
Mikey had a horrible matchup, you know, Fletcher Cox, right? He's one of the three or four best inside players in the league. He's big, he's strong, he's massive, he's really good. I don't care what his numbers are, the guy's an incredible player. And he was primarily over Spriggs in this game. Man, what a first start it was. All right, he got knocked around and about and on the ground, and, you know, if you really look at that thing, it was brutal. And, I mean, if this had happened to Taylor or Sitton or Lang or anybody, I mean, I'd be all over them and everybody else would be noticing it. I mean, it was kind of a mauling, like I wrote the other day.
It was bad.
Now, the ball was out, and it was out all night long, and maybe less than a second. There just wasn't time to get there. And it helped everybody on the offensive line, not just Spriggs. So there was no sacks by Cox. He had four pressures, three against Spriggs. Okay, Spriggs is not a guard, Mike.
He won't ever be a guard, I don't think.
And I give the kid a lot of credit. He really fought the good fight. I mean, he'd get knocked down, and he'd come scrapping back the next play like a little fly against a tiger or something or a lion and go right after the guy. And I really liked his spirit and his fight. But he's not a guard. He will be better next week, this coming game, you know. But it was really something else. And Don Barclay would have had the same fate. This guy's too good.
How much of it with Spriggs in particular is just the simple math of he doesn't weigh enough?
I think it's a lot. He's like 303, 305.
Barely scraping 300.
And he's too tall for guard. I mean, kind of, at least at that weight. If he was 325, his height would be fine, but that's a nasty business in there with those guards, and you got to be big, and you got to be strong. That's the way the game is nowadays, and he just doesn't, you know, he doesn't have that bulk.
So what happens this week, Barclay or Spriggs?
So what did McCarthy say this week?
Barclay or Spriggs. They'll decide on Saturday.
So they won the game. He's going back with Spriggs. He's got to. He just doesn't want to let the Texans know, but he's going back with Spriggs. He's healthy. You know, Spriggs didn't know when to shoot his hands. His timing was screwed up. He's used to playing out on the edge. But again, I like the guy's fight. That's an awful assignment. He'll remember this the rest of his career. If he plays for 10 years, he'll never forget this first start. But it was a win. It was no sacks, you know. Like Ross Verba used to always tell me when I'd approach him in the locker room when he was a young player. Hey, Bob, no sacks, no pressures. He says, get away from me. I said, okay, Ross. And Spriggs can say, well, no, he had pressures, but interesting. And he got banged around in the run game too, you know. He fell off some stuff. He got trashed here and there. But again, he kept battling, and he did some good things at the second level. You know, he shows his quickness and his athleticism at the second level. He was on some linebackers. Other times he would overextend. I'm not positive, but I'm guessing there was some mental mistakes once or twice, maybe more, leaving a combination block a little bit too early. You don't have that delicate sense of timing that Lang would have with Lindsley or Balaga, whatever way it went. So all that was there, but it was a win.
It was a win.
Yep.
Now let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball. Two pieces of news. First, we'll talk about Demarius Randle coming back into this secondary. He had a groin injury, had surgery for that out in Philadelphia, missed a handful of games. He's back now. He basically assumed that number one role right from the beginning. Him, Ladarius Gunter, Quentin Rollins were the three corners, with Rollins playing in the slot. First of all, what did you think of Randle? And then second of all, what do you think of that trio?
So then Micah Hyde was relegated to the dime back.
Right.
Or when there was an injury, then he moved into safety, whatever. All right, Rollins played pretty well. I mean, he did pretty well against, I can't remember who they
Randle.
Had in there. Or I meant Rollins first. I was just going to mention Rollins.
Okay.
He did pretty well. I liked him in the blitz. He was sent six times by Capers.
Yeah.
All right, now Demarius. How did you see it first, Mike?
Well, I thought there were a couple signs of rust. I thought missing that tackle against Carson Wentz in the flat was one. And I thought not even turning his head around on that back shoulder throw to, was it Jordan Matthews? Yeah, on the left side there. You know, Randall's a guy that he lives for interceptions, and there's very few times where his head is not turned around because he just wants to catch the ball every single time. That's sort of his thing. So to me, that was just a sign of rust. I thought he played okay. I thought, once again, his tackling remains questionable, and that was the case last year too. But I think just having him back with the demeanor that he plays with is big for the secondary, because Gunter can show you a little bit of fire sometimes, but Rollins is like a church mouse out there. He never shows any emotion. He's silent. And I think having Randall's little confidence, cockiness, swagger will help them a little bit.
Yeah. You know, Randle was not aggressive at all, Mike, in wanting in on the action. He missed three tackles, and he was holding back. And the injury was a groin injury for Demarius, right? And, I mean, I just, you know, it's hard to comment about injuries, you know, and what a player does. I mean, I just don't know. But, I mean, I assume if a guy's put on the field by the medical staff, there should be no excuse for him not to tackle and to go and hit people. But having said that, if that's the case, well, he really wasn't doing that. And you just can't. A defense can't play with 10 guys who want in on the action and maybe one who doesn't. So I wouldn't ever say that about Randle in the past, but this was not good, and he was sort of turning stuff down. And maybe he's smarter than everybody else. Maybe he knew, hey, they need me on the field, and if it means maybe that I just don't go jump in piles recklessly or something, then that's the way it goes. But I'm staying on the field, and I'm playing 60 minutes, and I'm living to play the next game. That's part of it, too, you know. Maybe that was in his he made a conscious decision and didn't tell anybody that. I don't know.
And the other thing was, I mean, we don't know necessarily how comfortable he felt with that injury. I mean, he could go and hit somebody. He could have tweaked it real early but said, hey, I need to be on this field because, unfortunately, these guys have been torched the last couple of weeks. So you never know. He might have been playing it safe for the long run. He also might just have been a little tentative coming back from injury.
That's true.
I mean, this was a guy last year that was banged up, you know, consistently, but it was never the type of injury that kept him out for several weeks at a time. And so I wonder if he was just kind of a little shell-shocked, maybe, for lack of a better term, and didn't know how to handle things. Now, before we move on real quick, I just saw this on my phone. Sean Richardson got cleared to play.
When's the last time he played? September of 2015?
Yeah. Sean Richardson, former Packers safety. He had the neck injury last year. I think it was against Seattle. That basically most people presumed would end his career. He had a second cervical fusion surgery in his neck. And he's been cleared by, let's see, what does it say here? Cleared by multiple doctors. And he's going to start working out for NFL teams. Would anybody take a risk on that?
The Packers hold the key to his future. I mean, if their doctors, if they don't want to take him back, their doctors are closest to him. Would any of the other 31, if they don't?
Would you pay him minimum salary to play special teams and see what happens? I mean, what risk is there for the team in that sense? Is there a lot or no?
just that the guy gets injured again, he's on your IR, you're paying him all kinds of money.
Right.
I'd be surprised if he's ever signed. Two cervical fusions, right?
Yep. His first one was in 2012, and the last one was obviously after this most recent injury. I don't know.
Yeah, they got a lot of safeties on this team. He won't be back here.
That's true.
With Evans and Bryce, I mean, those are the big guys that Roel Richardson once had here.
Right.
That promising hybrid big guy.
Yep.
So they got two of them on the two rookies. He's not coming back here, barring injury.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. But now let's, pardon the tangent there. I just saw that on my phone, thought it was interesting. Let's talk a little bit about Clay Matthews. He moved inside for this game against Philadelphia based on injury need. Jake Ryan, Blake Martinez, both hurt, both unable to go, both inactive. And so Matthews moves back inside. He plays opposite Joe Thomas. And about 6 minutes after kickoff, he gets absolutely leveled in the open field. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about that hit and who it was and what it means?
It was second and two. They ran a jet sweep. I can't picture the whole play, but Matthews read it well. I thought he got there faster than Martinez or Ryan would have got there. I still think he could have got there quicker. You know, there's a saying, you got to have your head on a swivel, Mike, in those open field things. And he's used to playing the edge now for the last 4 or 5 months. And so he's not, his head's not so much on a swivel anymore as it was playing inside. And he wasn't swiveling that head. And Alan Barber peeled back. And I can't recall what Barber did initially on that play.
I don't know either.
He may have tried to block 42 Burnett. I can't remember. But he came back with a perfectly legal shot and hit him on that left AC joint, right?
No, he said the hit was not what caused the AC joint. He said it was he landed on the shoulder.
Oh.
He said the hit was not necessarily what caused it. It's when he landed, hurt that left shoulder after the game, said that the x-rays came back negative. He didn't break anything, but he thought there was some damage to the AC joint.
Let me mention this, Mike. Then he came back about two plays later on a first and goal on the three. They ran off left tackle, and they pull Isaac Sumalo, the right guard, and he pulled right on top, right into Matthews. Couldn't really see it from the TV copy. I haven't checked the other one. But Matthews came out of that holding his arm, and then the next play on the touchdown on the run by Wentz, Matthews couldn't even get in. He was a one-arm player on that. So that's really where most of the damage could have occurred.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens for him over the next couple days. His initial reaction when he spoke to the media yesterday was he labeled it a cheap shot. He said he thought it was kind of bogus. He said he'd like to say more about it, but he didn't want to, you know, open up a real big can of worms. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but my initial thoughts on his statement calling it a cheap shot were this. If it's within the rules of the game, how can it be a cheap shot? In other words, if you're going to rough the passer, fine, you can call that a cheap shot because it's a penalty. But if you don't get flagged and you did not do anything that's outside of the rules, I don't know how you can label it a cheap shot. I mean, obviously it hurts and it's a brutal hit, but I don't get it.
You know, we're really at a disadvantage here, Mike, because my football career ended after 12th grade and yours never began. So there's a code out on the field where you're trying not to hurt people, right? And we don't know what that code is.
True.
I can't relate or respond to it. But again, I'm like you. Anything done within legal framework, I'm all for it. And hey, you're doing anything you can to win, and I agree with your point there. But again, that code about honor and not maiming somebody, I don't get that.
Is there also, do you think, an element to the code with former teammates?
No.
No?
I don't think so in that regard.
Okay. Because I didn't know, like, let's say Pepper's got a new contract next year and he went to some other team. Is there a written code that if he has an opportunity to sack Rodgers, he brings him down but doesn't, you know, absolutely level him the way he would somebody else?
It's all in someone's heart, I guess. Barber had 2 or 3 seconds to think about it, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did. So it was a little bit of premeditation there. It wasn't just bang, bang. And he made his call.
I overheard one writer in the press box, not from our publication, that said if it hit like that when he was in Green Bay, he might be wearing green tonight.
Yeah. Alan Barber.
Was he a bust here?
Yeah, he lasted 3.5 years. He started first 7 games at right tackle in 09. He was a disaster. He's really more of a guard. He was playing out of position the other night at tackle, his first start there in 2 years. But he's, you know, it took him a long time. He's kind of a hillbilly guy from Missouri, small town. And he's become a player. More power to him, you know.
Anything else you want to talk about from the Eagles game?
Let's take a look here, Mike. I don't think so. We discussed Spriggs. I think that's about it.
Okay. We will take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and take a look at the Houston Texans.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So we're back in the AFC South this weekend after our little stint through the NFC East, and the Houston Texans are coming to town Sunday afternoon. A noon game, Bob. I'm excited.
How about that? The Packers are 1-2 against the AFC South. They defeated Jacksonville, lost to the Colts and the Titans. Right, okay. So now this is the division leader. The Houston Texans is 6-5. On Monday, Bill O'Brien, their coach, kind of summed it up. He said, look, our defense has played well. Our offense needs to play better. I mean, let's put the cards on the table. The defense has given up less than 100 yards rushing in 3 straight games and played really hard. Like, could they play a little bit better on a couple shot plays and here and there against yesterday? Yeah. You know, but I like our defense. They've played well. We've got to play better on offense, but I know our defense understands the challenge of going into Green Bay. It'll be a very difficult team, very difficult opponent, great coaching staff. So that's what they are. They're a tough team that cannot score but plays pretty tough defense. They're a 6.5-point dog.
Okay.
The last meeting between the two teams, Mike, was in October of 2012 at Reliance Stadium. The Packers won that one 42-24. Aaron Rodgers, 6 touchdown passes. Matt Schaub, 2 picks. All right, so it all comes down. T.J. Yates also played in that game. And during the offseason, the owner, Bob McNair, the GM, Rick Smith, and the coach, Bill O'Brien, decided they were going to strike out and try to get better at quarterback. They're desperate. Desperate teams at quarterback. They felt they couldn't win with Brian Hoyer and whatever, so they jumped into free agency, and they went after Mr. Brock Osweiler, who had made 7 starts in 4 years for Denver, looked fairly decent down the stretch last year as Peyton Manning's guy. Manning retired. Elway drew a line in the sand on how much he wanted to pay him, and when the Texans offered 4 years, 72 with 37 guaranteed, he let him go, and he's been the guy. He's taken every snap this year.
Wow.
72.2 passer rating, last among the 32 guys. He's not been good, and it's dragged him down. They have 16 offensive touchdowns, fewest in the league.
He's got more interceptions than touchdown passes.
Is it 13-12? Yeah, you're right. 13 picks, 12 touchdowns. All right, what's he got? He's 6'7", 240. He ran 4.97. He's not immobile. He can run. He's got a live arm, Mike. He can zing it. You could see that in Denver. But he's just not a quick processor right now. He's just, you see quarterbacks, so many in the league, making these great decisions, and it's just not happening. You'll see him fire to his tight ends. They love tight ends, and he'll throw a 9-yard pass from him to the tight end, but he'll throw it too hard, and it'll clang off his hands. He doesn't lead receivers properly, you know, and so they don't get much run after the catch. They're forever going behind them or low or having to fall to make a catch. It's just not sharp. He had 25 on the Wunderlich. I said he ran 4.97. He's the key. They're not making any big plays at all. They are what they are. They've never scored more than, I think, 27 points.
He's got some weapons, though.
He's got one great one in DeAndre Hopkins, but they're wasting him. Hopkins' numbers are way down. He's starting to see a lot of cloud coverage and bracket stuff. Hopkins is only runs 4.54. You know, speed is not his game. But he's very competitive and big. He's got a catching radius, a long catching radius, strong hands, doesn't drop. But people are just getting in his face with safety help, so we'll have to see how the Packers play it. Hopkins is a guy who could damage this Green Bay secondary big time. I mean, he could have 150, 200 yards. He's that good. All right, now on the other side, Will Fuller's come back, the rookie from Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Right. And he's come back after a bunch of injuries, and he's healthy now, and he can fly, 4.33 fly, fast, fast, fast. He's not going to give you much inside, but on sideline takeoff routes, I mean, he can do damage to Ladarius Gunter and Randall and Rollins or whoever else is out there. Braxton Miller, the old quarterback from the Buckeyes, he plays the slot. He's raw, but he can sure run after the catch. Tight ends are all pretty average. C.J. Fedorowicz, Ryan Griffin from UConn, and Steven Anderson, a rookie from Cal. They throw a lot to him. I mean, I think this is O'Brien's third year, maybe his fourth, but tight ends now are prominent again. They're just okay. All right, the running game is where they have to make it happen. They paid $14 million guaranteed to Lamar Miller to leave Miami. Lamar Miller has been the fifth leading rusher in the league right now with, I think, 881. Let's check, Mike. And 4.211 carries. He's really good. He's so patient, he's almost too patient. He's a crease runner. He's not a downhill tough guy on third and one, but he can hit it. And, Mike, he ran 4.36 5 years ago. He can take it to the house.
You used to be a crease runner back in the day. That's what they used to say about you.
So Miller, can he win the game? Maybe. And then they throw off play action. So we'll see how the Green Bay run defense is, if it's the way it has been or the way it was in the beginning of the year.
When I know you talked to scouts about Will Fuller before the draft, but I'm wondering, anybody that you've talked to recently, what they think of him? Because his first two games, 5 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown. Second game, 4 catches, 104 yards. And then since then, the injuries crept in.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, are people viewing that as just sort of a fluke at the beginning, or is that what he could be for them? I mean, average catch in those games, about 23 yards.
I know, Mike, he played pretty good the last 2 weeks, and he was injured before that. I'm not sure about the start of the year. He has not, hands are inconsistent. He dropped a ton at Notre Dame his last 2 years. So, I mean, he's not a great player.
He's got a punt return touchdown, too.
Yeah, he does, yeah. And he's back doing that now. All right, backups. Alfred Blue's kind of a huge, tall guy, 6'2.5", kind of a inside-the-tackle, meat-and-potatoes guy. And Akeem Hunt from Purdue is really a fast scat back. He had a nice run against the Chargers for 16. The fullback will really lay the leather on you. Jay Prosh, boy, that's some of the best initial contact I've seen from a fullback in quite a while. This guy, so if it's Clay Matthews with a bad shoulder and they're going to run some ISO, wow, Clay does not want to see this number 45 coming at him. I just thought of that now. That's a real problem for Clay.
Where's he from? Mr. Prosh.
Prosh is from Auburn, the Auburn Tigers.
Okay. You don't see too many true bruising fullbacks anymore.
No, you don't. This guy gets after it. All right, the line. Two starters are gone. The center, Nick Martin, the rookie, was going to start at center. And Mr. Newton started the first 6 games or so at right tackle, a 6-year vet, both out for the year. All right, the best guy's left tackle, Dwayne Brown. He's been to one Pro Bowl, I think. He's not great, but he's a really, really good left tackle. Oh, boy. Second best, ex-chief right guard, Jeff Allen. Kind of an interior presence with a bad body. Doesn't really get beat too bad, and he can move people. Third best, I'm going to go to the center. This guy from Toledo who wasn't drafted, a second-year guy, Greg Mance. Some scouts really spoke highly of this guy to me before that draft. He wasn't picked because he had an injury that senior year, but Mance stepped in for Martin, and he's pretty good. He's 6'5", he's smart, 35 on the Wunderlich. He's not a great athlete, and he can be ISO'd up on, but He's okay. The left guard is Xavier Suafilo, UCLA, second-round pick in 2014. They took him at 33, and as one scout pointed out, three picks later, the Raiders took Derek Carr. You know, he thinks that would just haunt a front office if he was involved in it. Interesting point, you know. Suafilo's just kind of a guy. He's just an average guard. And the right tackle is a problem. So replacing Newton is Chris Clark. He filled in at Denver periodically over his 7 or 8 years. He was there last year, won a Super Bowl off the bench. He got destroyed by Joey Bosa the other day, Mike. Bosa also went over the other side and went over after Duane Brown. Joey Bosa is the truth. I've seen him now two or three times this year. Every time he gets better and better.
I saw one article from the Washington Post that suggested that if the season ended today, he might eclipse Prescott or Elliott as Rookie of the Year.
Wow. How many games did he miss? Three, maybe? Two?
Yeah. I think it was two.
That doesn't surprise me. This is unreal. So Clark's going to have a problem with Peppers and Perry and whoever else is over there. He's not terrible, but he's close. All right, so that's the offense. It's one of the worst in the league. Yeah. They signed Josh Walker about a month ago, the ex-Packer guard tackle.
Yep.
He has not played yet. He's a guard and a tackle for them. I think he's a pretty good player, Mike.
I do, too. I've always thought he was a decent player.
He's big. He's got some movement.
He'll maul.
Yes, he will. He's smart. He was on the street for almost 2 months, and that surprised me.
He was hurt.
Oh, well, you're right.
Yeah,
when he left Green Bay.
From the Packers for the knee, MCL problem.
Okay. So I wonder how long he was healthy. Okay, yeah. So the Texans jumped on him when they had injuries. Yep. When Newton went down, they signed him. Okay, now the defense. Romeo Crennel, the D-line coach under Bill Parcells for those Super Bowls, and he coached under Belichick for years in New England.
Former Browns head coach.
Correct. And a former Chiefs head coach who
yes,
beat the Packers.
That's right, yep.
In 2011, December. All right. It's a 3-4. They blitz a lot. They're number 8 in the league right now in blitz percentage, according to Sport Radar. Combination coverage. It's really a good unit. You look at this, there aren't a lot of household names, but they play well together. And as two scouts said, they are an outstanding tackling team. All right, the front. 35-year-old Vince Wilfork. Mike, he's listed at 325, 6'1". Excuse me. He's listed at 6'2", 325. Well, he's 6'1". He's been 6'1 since the day he was measured at the combine 12 years ago. His weight, I estimated 360.
Now, wow.
It could be more, Mike. No one knows.
who tips the scales? You know, one of those scales that they have in science where you put one thing on one side, one on the other. Who wins between him and Terrence Knighton?
Oh, I think, what's his name?
Pot roast?
Yeah, I'm going with him.
Okay.
Now, late in the game, in that Charger game, you'll see, I don't know, there was some kind of play off to the sideline, and Vince had to run maybe 10 or 12 steps. It was comical. Check that out, Mike. All right. But he's immovable.
He can still play a little bit.
Yes,
he
can.
Yeah, okay.
You can't move him. Now, will he even be on the field against Green Bay with all this spread stuff? Probably not.
He doesn't play in sub at all?
I don't think so.
Okay.
The Chargers, you know, they have Melvin Gordon and they run the ball. That's what I was seeing. He may not play more than 5 snaps. Who knows? Goal line a little bit. Wheel him out there. Okay. Devin Still was going to start for them at defensive end, 5 technique. He's out for the year. So that was in August. So now they got 4 guys they rotate. Christian Covington and Antonio Smith have pass rush. DJ Reader and Joel Heath, a couple rookies, have no pass rush. All right, let's start with Covington. He's got good quickness. His dad was a heck of a pass rusher in the CFL, Grover. I think Grover maybe had a tryout with Green Bay 30 years ago, but seems like it. He's okay. All right, Antonio Smith. He's one of my favorite players in the league, Mike. I wrote about this guy today. I love this guy. He's an interior rusher. I talked to him at the Super Bowl in Denver last year when he won a ring. His coach, Bill Kohler, just went on and on. He loves this player. Everybody loves Antonio Smith. He's emotional. He's tough. He's durable. He's got stamina. Best of all, he's got interior pass rush. He has his whole career. He's got 51 and a half sacks. All right, he's 35 years old. He and Wolfork are the only remaining D linemen from the 2004 draft. The only two left.
Okay.
They're both 35, man. They're survivors. Antonio Smith got a sack for Denver last year against Green Bay. Corey Linsley let him go on a stunt. Bingo, he sacked Rodgers in 2.4 seconds. Antonio was out of work for 6 months. They signed him when they lost J.J. Watt. He's a dangerous player, and he's going to probably get in fights. If I remember, he got in a pushing, shoving match with T.J. Lang or Josh Sitton a couple years ago when he was playing for the Raiders in Green Bay, I think. Maybe that was Houston. I don't know. But he's been all over, and he's good. All right, now the plug guys are Joel Heath, rookie free agent from Michigan State, big, not very good, and DJ Reader, a mid-round draft pick from Clemson, 335. He was a baseball pitcher in high school.
At 330-something. Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
DJ's got some movement. He's all right. Now, the backers, they're really, really, really good. The best, I think, is Whitney Mercilus.
Merciless,
yeah.
Great football name, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's just merciless out there.
Mike, you wait till you see this guy. He was terrific in San Diego. He's got good numbers. He can beat you with speed around the corner. He will win with counter moves and spin moves inside. He's slippery against the run. He had three tackles for loss. This is a tremendous player. I mean, I don't know if he's Pro Bowl or not, but he's one of the best the Packers have seen. I take him over Kerrigan. I take him over Robert Mathis. I take him over the Morgan guy from Tennessee.
We spoke to Bill O'Brien on the conference call yesterday, and he was asked if anyone in particular had sort of stepped up their level of play after J.J. Watt got hurt. And the first person he named is Merciless. He said, I think he's had a heck of a year, 14 and a half sacks last season. He said he's played well again this year. Very complimentary of him, and immediately named him as the guy that's picked up slack with J.J. Watt not there.
Yeah. All right, Jadeveon Clowney, the first pick in the 2014 draft. His first 2 years were ruined by injury. He's been healthy this year. Okay. He's playing pretty darn good football. I mean, that gives him two real threats. You know, he has this 37.5 vertical. He's got long wingspan, ran great. He's hard to block, but he doesn't really know how to finish. He's out of control sometimes. One scout described him like as a bull in a china shop. He misses sacks. He's around. He misses sacks. He's also explosive against the run. The Packers are going to have real problems if they try to run outside against either Clowney or Merciless. Yep. He also will play with his hand down with their injuries up front. He does play a five technique in their base defense. Probably won't see much base this week. A really good backup, John Simon, is going to be probably out with a chest injury. So they have no depth outside.
So what is it? I'm looking at their depth chart here, and they have John Simon listed under Jack. I've never seen that. What does that generally refer to?
Kind of a Will outside guy.
Okay.
It's a Belichick term Romeo uses.
So how would it be significantly different from a regular Will that they have listed here?
Yeah, they use the Will as the weak inside backer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, I got you.
So that's the Will Mike referred to. It's Benardrick McKinney, second-round pick in 2015. Certainly would have been a target for the Packers in that draft. He was in there with Eric Kendricks, who went to Minnesota. There were two other. There was a guy from TCU. There was four inside backers. The Packers ended up with Jake Ryan in the fourth round. Right. McKinney's been really, really good. Second round pick from, Mississippi State. Yeah.
I covered him a couple times.
Okay. 6'4", 265, and runs good. Now, he's a good run player with that speed and size, but he did a lot of good pass rushing in college, and he's continued it here. Crennel will walk him and Brian Cushing up into those A-gaps. He does damage there, but then also he will sometimes even walk out in some of this walk-around third down and long stuff, and he will go off to the edge, and he can beat a tackle standing up from around the edge. He has a knack for pass rush. Where is he weak? He's weak in coverage with his instincts. Now, his length and his height and his speed helps, but yet he still has slow trigger instincts. The Raiders got after him Monday night in Mexico City. They also got after Brian Cushing, the Mike, the strong inside backer. Cushing came out with played with Clay Matthews at USC.
And Nick Perry.
Yep. Had a bunch of injuries. I mean, he's a really tough downhill guy, okay? But he's lost some of his physical dynamic ability.
Dynamism.
Is that a word?
Yes.
Dynamism, huh? Okay, yep. Mm-hmm. So, and Cushing, okay, I mean, he's not great, but he's a tough rundown player. So Green Bay's going to struggle to run the ball. I think we're going to see 50 passes again, Mike. And
well, you're excited for that, aren't you?
Not really, Michael. Okay. Max Bulla, sometimes the former Michigan State free agent, he'll come in and just give Cushing a breather.
Son of the former Syracuse defensive coordinator when I covered the team, Chuck Bulla.
And nephew of Hank Bulla, the Packers' former defensive coordinator.
Yep.
So that is, what's his dad's name?
Chuck. And he was the defensive coordinator at Syracuse when I covered the team there as my first job out of college.
Chuck played at Michigan State.
Yes, he did.
As did Hank, as did this kid. All right, it's quite a family tree. By the way, I saw Hank in East Lansing about a year ago. People remember him for his 4 years under Lindy and Fonny. He also had a few months, if I remember, under Forrest Gregg before he became head coach of the USFL Pittsburgh Maulers. And I helped Hank pack up his office that day in like May of 84. I carried his boots out of his office at Green Bay down to his truck. He was going to join the Maulers.
Think they'd let you do that today? Let you into those offices and carry things out of them?
Hank is an all-time character, Mike. Hank Bulla, still going strong in Lansing. He loves those green meanies over there. All right, the secondary, they lost probably their best corner, Kevin Johnson, a few weeks back with some injury, out for the year. All right, the right corner is A.J. Bowie, a free agent from Central Florida in his fourth year. He's their best cover guy, Mike. Ran 4.55, but he plays faster than that. He's physical. He's had three penalties against the Chargers. He does go a little overboard. But he's a combative, aggressive kid, and I like him. He can cover. The left corner is Jonathan Joseph, a former first-round pick of the Bengals in like 06. Joseph's been in Houston 5 or 6 years. He's lost a step. He once ran 4.31. But Joseph, he's still okay. He can still cover. He's probably their best man cover guy. The slot is Kareem Jackson, another former number one pick. He's lost some speed. He's adequate. He'll tackle. The whole secondary tackles. All right, that's their three. The safety is another converted corner, which again helps them in all the spread stuff against Green Bay. This is Andre Hall, a seventh-round pick in 2014. He can cover. He ran 4.52. He's playing safety now. He's small, 5'10 and a half. He's not going to kill anyone. But he gets guys down, and he doesn't get beat deep. Quinton Demps, he's a nine-year vet.
Former Eagle.
Yeah. Former Giant, too, I believe. Ran 4.39 coming out. He doesn't do that anymore, but he still can run okay. You know, he tackles better than he did in college at UTEP, I believe. But Demps had some real bad plays against the Chargers. He gave up a 52-yard touchdown to Cam Inman. He bit on a double move really bad, and so Rodgers will be trying to get people matched up on Quinton Demps.
Back when he was younger and played for the Eagles and he was closer to that original 40 time that you mentioned, he had some return responsibilities too. He used to be a return guy for Philadelphia.
Pretty good, I think, on kickoffs.
Pretty good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yep. Eddie Pleasant, a free agent from Oregon who can really run and he's tough.
Not a good football name.
Eddie Pleasant, no. Straight line speed guy. He played like 12 snaps against the Chargers. You can get after him in coverage. All right, the special teams. Coach Larry Izzo, the former special teams performer for Belichick for a decade in New England. All right, Nick Novak is the kicker. He's a little below average among the 32 guys. Maybe 25% quartile.
Quartile?
How about that?
What a word, Bob.
He beat the Colts in OT from 33. I think he beat the Packers for Washington in 2012, maybe? I don't know. At FedEx. Oh, some overtime field goal, I think. Shane Leckler, 40-year-old punter. the old great Raider, still pretty good. The dual return man, Tyler Irvin, probably not going to play with some injury. So they have Akeem Hunt on kickoffs, and they have Mr. Will Fuller on punts, who had a touchdown.
Earlier this year, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They have a really good special teams guy, number 52, inside backer Brian Peters. So that's Houston. They're 6-5. They're half a game ahead in their division. I think the spread is a little high, 6.5.
Okay.
I don't see – the more I got into this defense, I think their defense can really give the Packers problems. Can they score? That depends on Osweiler throwing a couple bombs against Green Bay secondary and Miller controlling tempo. I see it as a close game that could go either way.
Do you think the Texans go on to win their division? Are they a playoff team when the season's over?
Well, we've seen the Titans and the Colts and the Jags. We've seen – forget the Jags. We've seen the other two recently, Mike.
Yeah.
I like the Titans.
I do, too. That was going to be my pick.
I'm putting the Colts third and these guys second.
Although the Titans' defense is not good.
They got the good front with Jarrell Casey.
Yeah, but who can cover anybody back there now?
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe getting rid of – what's his name?
Parrish Cox.
Is an addition by subtraction. We shall see. We're going with the Titans, huh?
Unless they perish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to take a few questions here before we wrap this up. Let's see what we've got this week. All right. We got some good questions this week. We always thank you guys for sending those in. Let's see. The first one that we're going to take a look at comes from Guy Pakeman or Pacman. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. Guy wants to know, what is Devontae Adams doing differently compared to last year? How has he improved so much? Well, I sort of wrote about it in my article in today's paper. I think it's all within the first couple yards of the line of scrimmage. You know, this is a guy who ran 4.55, so he's not that fast in terms of having the ability to just blow by somebody the way Trevor Davis or Jeff Janis could. And so, to me, what he's doing instead is finding ways to beat guys deep by doing it at the line of scrimmage. In other words, he's creating about 2 yards of separation instantly, so that when he does get downfield, he's got a head start, and it sort of offsets a little bit of the lack of top-end speed. So to me, that's how he's getting open this year. And you looked at both touchdowns. I know you mentioned it in your rating. I mean, what he does at the line of scrimmage is how he's winning. That's how he's winning right now. Let's see. This question comes from the Youper. The Youper asks questions quite often. And we're going to merge it together with a question from Eduardo Anakin, because you're both kind of asking the same thing. The Youper wants to know, will we see a bit more of a running game as we hit December? And Eduardo wants to know, will they continue using James Starks, even though he struggled a little bit here? What do you think, Bob? December, running football weather?
Well, it is. That's true. Youper from Iowa, right?
Yes.
And we love that gentleman in Iowa. And but I don't think it's going to happen this week. They're too darn stout. Wilfork, you can't move him. Can't budge that big man. And they tackle good. A lot of toughness and size at inside backer. Set the edge outside. I don't see that happening this week. It's going to have to happen if they're going to reach the playoffs, but not this week.
Traditionally, has McCarthy increased how much he runs the ball in December?
Definitely, and he plays more with a fullback, more two-back. You'll see more of Ripkowski. Now, regarding Starks, yeah, he's got to be a big factor down the stretch. He's their power back. Kristen Michael will get his chance, certainly, but yes, that has to come through.
All right, and the last question comes from Bobby. He wants to know, Bob, does Maggie cut your hair and Mike could use a haircut? Well, I got a haircut, so we're clear on that end. But what is he talking about with Maggie here?
My daughter Maggie Dame, she's one of my three kids. And yes, she does cut my hair at Dame, D-A-M-E, Salon and Spa in downtown East De Pere. And funny you should mention that, tonight they have a grand opening over there, kind of an open house for customers. And I'm going to bop over there later on. It's a restored building in East De Pere, and boy, the place is beautiful right now, and they have all kinds of stuff, so Maggie would love to see you. Yep.
So the open house from 6 to 9.
Yep.
Come and get your haircut, and Bob will sign you an autograph.
No haircuts there tonight now.
No haircuts?
No, they closed it down.
Okay.
Just for a little party action.
Okay, sounds good. So we've reached our limit here. We're about 54, 55 minutes. We thank you guys for sticking with us, as always. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we appreciate their support. We're flashing back here, a little Backstreet Boys on the way out. See you guys next week. Designer, yeah.
it's too